when you're a kid growing up, there are a lot of words that you know the translation of because you were taught how to tie chumash. But there are words that you never really hear in conversation anywhere else. So one such word, I think, is the word hine. Right, what does hine mean? How do you tie chine?
Behold.
Behold. Yeah, do people use that in conversation? Right? Behold. You don't really have that so much. So what exactly is the proper context to use that word? Let's say I wanted to start using the word hine in conversation, the word behold in conversation. How would I be using that properly? So this week's parasha, Bas Paro opens up a basket. Vihine na'ar boche. Behold, there was a baby that was crying. Now, l'chora, what's the behold about it? What's the hine? And later on, Moshe Rabbeinu goes out to survey the situation of Mitzrayim, see what's going on. Vihine shnei anashim ivrim nitzim. That there are two Jewish people fighting with one another. Two guys are fighting. Behold. L'chora, that's a bit of a strange one, right? Because Moshe Rabbeinu, it's not even the first fight Moshe Rabbeinu saw in the parsha. He saw him an ish mitzvi makai ish ivri. So why is what's the behold that now he saw a fight? And behold, hine. What is the behold of a fight? Second of all, when the Bas Paro found Moshe, the Chumash says that when she saw the baby crying, v'tomer miyaldei ivrimzeh, she said, oh, the baby's crying? This must be a Jewish baby. That's a little bit strange. I think non-Jewish babies cry also, right? Meaning if this were a thing that only Jewish babies cried, then you would imagine birth rates among non-Jews would be much, much higher. They have no tuition, and they have no crying, right? Imagine getting a full night's sleep after the baby's born. You would think they'd be having twins, all of that, right? So what was the indication? What was the indication that he was Jewish just because he was crying? I mean, the simple reading of the Pesukim, leaving aside Nol and Mahul or whatever else, and the Or and whatever. Now, third, there are certain people who, whenever you retell the story, you emphasize in the story because they're critical people in the way that things played out. It's natural that whenever you retell the story, there are some people that are going to be shortchanged, that you're not going to really highlight enough what their role was. It seems that the way we typically tell the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, we leave out a very critical group of people, and that is the Jewish taskmasters in Mitzrayim. At the end of this week's parasha, look at Perek Hei, the very last aliyah in this week's parasha. Right? I think it's like 17 psukim long. The Jewish taskmasters, the whole parak is about that. Right? It's about their experience in Mitzrayim. How much do we think about, how much of your Seder is dedicated to that? Compared to, let's say, gematrias or whatever, right? Meaning, like, you think about it, it's wild. They're a critical part of the story. There's a parak about that, a parak in Chumash about these Jewish taskmasters. Now, it's not so clear why they're so important in the story, but it seems that there's a lot about it. So the Torah tells us, Moshe Rabbeinu comes to Paro, he requests the freedom of the Jewish people. Paro not only denies the request, but he adds an extra quota, and he stops providing the necessary supplies to be able to meet that quota. The Jewish taskmasters are beaten for the inevitable shortfall of production, and the taskmasters then go to complain to Paro that the demands are just too great. He's not at all sympathetic to them. And then, Vayiru Shoter Bnei Yisrael, they see Bera, they see the evil things going on. Lema lo sigru min levnechem dvar yom biyomo. So the taskmasters see how terrible it was for the Jewish people, and when they ran into Moshe and Aaron, on their way out of the palace, they voiced their grievances to Moshe and Aaron. So Matzio Salman, the Likud Neshkiach, points out that last pasuk is in the wrong place. It's in the wrong place. The idea of seeing Barah should have been a few pasukim earlier when the original unreasonable demands were just made. Right? That's where they should have seen Barah. Why is it only after they go back to Paro to tell him how unreasonable it was, and they run into Moshe and Aaron, and only then they see Berah? As soon as Paro says that the quotas are there are going to be new quotas and no supplies, you should see Berah. So Rav Matzio quotes from his Rebbe, from Rav Elia Lapian, that there are two ways that Geula can come. The first way Geula can come is straightforward way, plan A, which is you accumulate whatever zechuyos you need to accumulate in order to bring about Geula. That was not going to happen in Mitzrayim. We were a memta shari tuma, we were not going to be able to develop the zechuyos necessary to get out. But there's always a plan B. And the plan B is what the Gemara in Shabbos Daf Kuf Nun Aleph tells us, which is called a merachim al abrios, merachim al avin hashmayim. That there will come a time that even if you don't deserve geula, says Rav Eliyahu Lapian, the Gemara is telling us, even if you don't deserve geula, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will say, you show rachmanus on my children, I will have extra rachmanus on you, and I'll make the geula happen even though you don't deserve it. If Jews could just show that they feel the pain of other people, of other Jews, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu will feel the pain of the entirety of the Jewish people, and that is going to be enough to trigger the geula. Rashi tells us that there was a mesorah in Klal Yisrael, that the true shliach for geula was going to come with a magic phrase, pakod yifkod, and as soon as he says that, we're going to know he's the guy. As soon as he says the magic words, and that's how they knew they could trust Moshe Rabbeinu. So all the achronim are bothered by the obvious kasha. If everyone knew what the magic words were going to be, what's to stop anybody from coming along and saying the magic word? Why didn't they have like 1,000 Shabtai Tzvi's? Right? Why didn't they have like all these people just coming along saying pakod yifkod, like see where it takes them, you know, and see if it works, right? So how does this work? So the Kotzker explains that pakod means, you know, in Hebrew a lot of times you have two words that might be translated similarly in English, but they obviously have different mashmos. Pakod means to remember. Zachar means to remember, but they mean different things. Zachar means I remember something. I remember what I ate for breakfast this morning. I remember, where I parked my car. I remember things. That's not a memory that's particularly moving to me. You know, the protein bar and coffee that I had this morning is the same protein bar and coffee I had every day for the last, since I started trying to stop eating bagels. But, not such a moving memory. But then there are memories that like trigger something like very nostalgic. You know, you don't have to admit, like when you hear a song that you were very into in high school, if you're somewhere, like, okay, you don't have to admit that. But like, you know, you hear the song that your wife walked down to the chuppah to, right? So that triggers something. I happen to have no idea what song my wife walked down to the chuppah to. But like, it triggers something in your mind, that in your heart, right? I mean, it's emotional. That's pakod. So the Kotzker says that the siman wasn't about saying a magical phrase. It was a person who seems to really, really care. How are we going to know? We always know. We can sniff out insincerity. Just like kids can sniff out insincerity in their parents, we can sniff it out. We'll be able to see when there's a leader who's genuine, who's real, who's someone to connect to, who's someone that we know genuinely cares. That really develops a deep emotional connection. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu appears to Moshe, he does so from a sneh. And Rashi explains, V'lo ilan acher, not another tree, a sneh. Mishum imono chibetzar, because Hashem is trying to tell Klal Yisrael, I'm with you in the tzar. The very first message, non-verbal message, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave to Moshe Rabbeinu, was by being in the sneh, to tell us that he's suffering along with us. And the more that we feel that pain, the more Hashem is going to feel that pain, until it becomes so unbearable that he's going to bring the geula. Kol merachim al abrios, merachim al avin hashamayim is a national thing also. It's not only a personal thing. And with that concept of nosei ba'ol, we could answer the question. The word hinei always indicates surprise. Behold means, whoa, what? I just took that mesquite test. You know, anyone here on the pulpit track? You got to take the mesquite? So I just took that test yesterday, because we're making all the guys take it. Why don't I take it, right? So I have my meeting next week to find out how socially off I am. So they show you pictures. Is this person surprised, astonished? I'm like, oh, what's the difference between surprised and astonished? I don't know. Is he sad or happy? Normally my wife tells me. I can't tell. All right, but anyway, the hinei means that a person is surprised. So it's almost like it's more of an emoji than it is a word, right? That's what hinei is. So the Baal HaTurim writes, V'inei nar bocha was not a reference to Moshe Rabbeinu crying. Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't a nar, he was a tinok. You wouldn't describe him as a nar. It's that there was a kid nearby, Aaron HaKohen, waiting to see what was going to be with his brother. And she picks up this baby, V'inei nar bocha, says the Baal HaTurim. Aaron was crying. And it says Baal Terum, V'neinar boche ze arum, shenichas v'etzal ha-teva. Where's the gematria? Don't worry. Nar boche b'gematria ze arun ha-kohen. She was surprised that there was someone else crying. The baby, of course, cries. Why is there someone else crying? Ooh, miyaldei ha-ivrim ze. A Jew who's suffering will always have someone else crying for them. You have someone else suffering, you don't know if there's going to be somebody crying for them. If there's a Jew suffering, there's always going to be somebody crying for them. That's how she knew miyaldei ha-ivrim ze. That's how she knew that he must be a Jewish kid. Later, Moshe Rabbeinu goes up, he leaves the palace, and he sees an ish mitzri, maki ish ivri, and there's no hine, because that's what an ish mitzri does. Even an ish mitzri, ish is lashon chashivos, that's what Salvechik pointed out, that every time we go into galus, HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts us in galus in the most sophisticated of societies, lest we be in galus in some third world country and we say, oh, if only I were in the sophisticated society of Germany, then they would treat us like nice, you know, like a mensch. No, HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts us where there's an ish, where there are people that are most sophisticated people. And it's no surprise that they're Make Ishivri. But then he sees that there are two Jewish people fighting. Hine. That shouldn't happen. That's not natural, that two Jewish people should be fighting. First thing he saw, the first time he came out, he saw Gullus. He saw an Ish Mitzri Make Ishivri. Second time he went out, he saw why Gullus happens. Because there are two Jews that are fighting. Rav Elia Lapian explains that the Shotrim were the ones who brought the Geula. They're the ones who actually triggered the Geula. Think about this next time you have to tell the story of Yitzchak Mitzrayim at your Pesach Seder. It's going to be hard to remember by then. But Rashi explains they didn't have to get beaten. All they had to do was report to the Egyptians which workers produced what and what the shortfalls were, and those guys would have gotten beaten. The Shotrim saw how much the laborers were suffering, and how they were being driven beyond the limits of human endurance, and they couldn't bear to watch them suffer anymore, so they took the beating for the other people. That act of extreme empathy is what activated HaKadosh Baruch Hu's midah of extreme empathy, and that set the Geula in motion. And that's why the Torah waits to tell us how they saw Bara, so that it could lead right into Atatira Asher Esel Paro. That right after they saw Bara, okay, now you're going to see what's going to happen with Paro. Now that there's a feeling of Nosei Ba'ol, now that there's a feeling of a Jew feeling the pain of another Jew, now you're going to see what I'm going to do to Paro. And that's the key to how a Jew handles a situation of suffering. When we see that there are families that are struggling, whether it be on individual levels, but certainly nowadays on a national level, a Jew cannot just go about his business as usual. You know, I go to a lot of weddings, you might guess. And at almost every wedding now, at the chuppah there's Tehillim, or sometimes there's the Mishaberich for the Chayilim. And, you know, right after the war started, those moments were like so powerful. Like there wasn't a sound in the room. It was, and now, at weddings, not just at weddings, even at my shul's in Love Malka, I was, when we sang the Eli Levin was there, the musician, and he sang the Mishmeret for the Chayilim beautifully. And the people are on the phones and they're schmoozing and they're this and that. And there's my Balabat, Chashub and North Woodmere people. These are the best of the best. Right? But there's a certain sense of Nosei Ba'ol that's missing. You know, we have to do something to recapture that. We have to make sure that our tefillos are real tefillos. Whatever the, I'm not getting into the Vinu Malkeinu debate, but what a Tehillim has got to be a Tehillim. It can't just be, that it's just words that come out of our mouth. We can't know what Hashem has in mind with any given event or tragedy, but we're allowed to use Chumash as a guide to how to solve the problems. And sometimes Hashem is looking to bring out within us a greater sense. Sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings Golus as a punishment, and sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings Golus because he wants something from us. And he wants to see that we have that sense of Nosei Ba'ol, that we have that sense of pain at the pain of other Jews. And when HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees that, that's when HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Merachem Aleinu Min HaShemayim.